this past week all that has occurred. We'll start with Israel. I have in the footnotes, and I hope that you can find your way around the footnotes. I take a lot of stuff from Telegram because that is current. It is germane. It has videos, insights. It has some good stuff. If I go on my Mac and I click something in the bibliography, the Mac will take me right to that blurb. If I click on this Windows computer, it won't. It'll just go to maybe the title of the host, but it won't go to that date. So that's why I put the date in the bibliography. Hopefully you can fish around a little bit, and I'll be very careful to try and get the heading the same in the bibliography as on Telegram, so you can recognize it. Anyway, there I have a 1990 film of Rabbi Schneerson, which some people called, at the time they called them the Messiah. Of course, they have a Messiah Ben David. So it isn't quite the same as ours. Telling Netanyahu, a young Netanyahu, to do more, bring about coming of their Messiah. Does the Antichrist, of course, their Messiah to us would be the Antichrist. Does the Antichrist want Talmud to be the law of the land? Is that why they're doing this? I mean, this last week brought it to the brink of civil war. I have videos in the footnotes of the Orthodox arming themselves and going to the protest with a gun and knives. It would turn into a civil war. Stephen thought perhaps that's what they wanted, because the Antichrist wants all nations to be ground and pulverized by war, famine, pestilence, all of it. He just wants people to be so downtrodden that they will follow anybody, and he's an anybody. He thinks he's a somebody. He's an anybody. This last week we saw the bill to criminalize the sharing of the gospel, which was withdrawn after about a week, and I wonder if Netanyahu finally realized that it would interfere with his ability to get funding from American Christians and this country if he were openly, rabidly anti Christian. So last Friday, the protesters in Israel called for a week of paralysis to resist what they called an attempt to turn Israel into a dictatorship. Massive demonstrations started in Jerusalem, Haifa, Beersheba, Tel Aviv, and it was over mostly the judicial reform, which is part of the checks and balances of a democracy. If there are no checks and balances, then you're going to lose your democracy. So I kind of agree with the people. In fact, that's what I thought when I first read it. Judicial reform, what's that? The Knesset can override it with a simple majority. 61 votes, bada bing, they can override the Supreme Court. This is not good. There should be a separation of entities. But then demonstrations were exacerbated Sunday. A defense minister called to stop process of judicial reform and was fired. And he, this is Gallant, and he is the one that controls the IDF, I believe. And at that, crowds erupted. Tel Aviv police chief marched with protesters. Protesters were 600,000 to 700,000 strong in Tel Aviv alone. Now, this is the same police chief that Ben-Gvir tried to fire because he wasn't hard enough on the protesters. Ben-Gvir would have decimated those protesters. Police chief did not, and here he is marching with protesters now. When Gallant was fired, the IDF increasingly refused to show up for duty, and it was spreading. The IDF is respected for defending the country. Israel closed down airports, schools, healthcare, and at this point, when the IDF said, no, we're not doing it, I think Netanyahu realized that he had overplayed his hand and said he would take back the reins of the judicial reform effort. And it has now ended in talks of trying to work out a compromise. I don't know if there's any compromising with the far right orthodoxy, but anyway, that's where they are at this point. But when he said we're going to postpone the changes, the far right came out And they started to demonstrate, saying that they were being denied the government that they wanted, that they needed. At this point, Ben-Gvir threatened to leave the coalition, leaving Netanyahu without a government, because he has one seat majority. He has 61 of 120. He desperately needs every member of his coalition that he has. And the coalition is all made up of pretty far-right Orthodox groups. The only way Netanyahu was able to prevent Ben-Gvir, secretary minister, from leaving the coalition was to subjugate Israel's National Guard to Ben-Gvir under his authority. He would have total control. So when he goes in with the National Guard, he can beat up those troops that he wanted the police chief of Tel Aviv to beat up, and he didn't. He can go in and do what he wants to, the National Guard. And I'm sure if this is allowed to fly, the National Guard will increasingly be made up also of far-right-wing orthodoxy. The Ben-Gvir's party is Otzma Yehudit. Platform of Otzma Yehudit is deport the enemies of the state. That would include Arabs. That's what Ben-Gvir wanted to do. Would it soon be believers in the state? Would it soon be any Jewish person who was not a member of the Orthodoxy? Party is considered, this is from Wikipedia, is considered to be religious Zionists, ultra-nationalist, anti-Arab, far-right, and has also been described as racist, although they deny this. The Association for Civil Rights in Israel said in response, "We already saw what happened when Ben-Gvir wanted to suppress the protests. Now we can only imagine what will happen when he has his own militias." It is important to understand, the article went on, the National Guard that Netanyahu promised is a private armed militia that will answer directly to Ben-Gvir. A private armed militia. You know, as I read this, I said, you know, this sounds like Hitler's brown shirts. This is a new and dangerous addition to the coup d'etat we are witnessing. As if it's not enough to act against the judicial system, we now see operative steps to take authorities from the police and turn them into Ben-Gvir's revolutionary guards, the association said. And this is the Association for Civil Rights in Israel. The embassy in Israel warned U.S. citizens to leave. I'm going to quickly go through this next part. It is called genocide. Karen Kingston, who has worked quality control for the pharmaceuticals for, I think, 20 years, she said the mRNA injections are demonic. It is an opening wedge for transhumanism. The latest Pfizer docs list graphene oxide as an ingredient. Now, this has been debated. Some researchers put forward that gender alterations is also a form of transhumanism, a transitional phase into genderless life forms. It's not what the Almighty made in the garden. They are now genderless, if they're even a life form. Eye disorders are now being realized as an adverse reaction, everything from lid irritation to blindness. This is something they're learning only a couple of years down the line. A pilot came forward and said that a pilot injury is severely underreported. There's a lot more trouble in the air than is being reported, and cited 4 incidents in 2 weeks. There's also coming from Edward Dowd, work absences are on a steep incline. People are sick. Now, the industry doesn't care that people are not well. They just want to make sure they have enough workers to cover the necessary job performance. I remember the video. It's not in the bibliography. I remember the video of a couple of years ago of an industrial personnel manager that was told by her bosses that they would soon lose 1/3 of their workforce, and could she find the bodies now that they can replace the bodies when they need them. Again, it's no care and consideration for human beings. They just want to make certain can cover the work. There is an excellent video here by Mike Adams with Dr. Paul Dr. Cottrell believes that the next pandemic will be a chimeric potion of SARS-2, HIV, and H5N1 bird flu. They need the HIV, just like when the COVID vaccine, they need it to rewrite, to get into the genome, can get into the genome reverse transcriptase. Moderna has indicated that its H5N1 injections will be made using the same mRNA technology found in the COVID shots, which means, of course, even more spike proteins, I understand, from statements they have made earlier that all vaccines and perhaps all injections, but surely all, including the annual flu shot, will contain mRNA. Please don't have any more injections into your body, not to work, not to go to school. No, they are upping their game, and they just want to get the graphene oxide to convert us into a living or a non-living electronic life form as quickly as possible. Dr. Cottrell said the only way bird flu will actually become a threat to people is if it is tampered with in the same way that COVID is believed to have been manipulated in a laboratory using gain-of-function technology. He opined that the next one will be aerosol HIV with SARS bird flu H5N1. And at that time, all the monkey moves will be underground. And that is congruent with the painting in Denver International Airport where there was this demonic Nazi life form. It wasn't a human, but he was flying in the sky, disseminating something on all the people. Will it be aerosol? I'm thinking back a couple of days. I listened to the talk by Dr. Cottrell. I think he opined that the most susceptible to this aerosolized weapon of mass destruction, of course, would be the vaxxed. There's an excellent interview with RFK. He's talking about the disproportionate effect of adverse events in the United States versus the rest of the world. Of course, this is another target on this country. It is a Christian country. It also is in the way of the globalists. They can't rule the world, they say, and it is true if the United States is. So they have to get rid of the United States. Also, the United States has a lot of Christians. The whole Western world is under attack. They are not attacking the West, other parts of the world, India or Iran or any parts of Africa by huge immigrant problem that is reserved for the industrialized West. With mass vaccination, that is reserved for the industrialized West. So RFK goes on to say that the U.S. has 4.2% of the global population, but suffered 16% of the COVID-19 deaths. The U.S. COVID death was a rate of 3,000 per 1 million. Nigeria had a death rate of 14 per 1 million. They virtually had no deaths. Japan, who has the most aged population in the world, had only 1/10 the death rate of the U.S. There are other things in here, but I'm kind of running out of time. Also here is Russia's strategic missile forces began what they say are exercises. Nonetheless, they are moving 3,000 military personnel and 300 pieces of equipment that are nukes. That's the 300 pieces of equipment. It's 300 nukes. They don't do this for nothing. Are we at a convergence here? I'm going to skip the next couple of slides I have in my slideshow to keep me on track here. I'm going to go to the banks. David Wilkerson This is what he said concerning the banks. Now, I've had visions, says David Wilkerson, recently, for I've been in New York City, and I was in Macy's in vision, and I saw people walking around stunned because they couldn't get their money out of the bank. Now, I'm going to give you a word of advice. The first country that goes bankrupt, and I've documented this, and I've got it sealed in an envelope, and I'm going to call my friends, and I'm telling you, this is the first time I've said it in a public meeting, but the first country that bellies up, you've got to get every dime you have out, because you've got 2 weeks. There's going to be a bank holiday. You won't be able to get a dime for 6 months. This is what he said. And I've put this in the audio message shown at the bottom of this post. He reveals the first country to go is Germany. Why would it be Germany? Why would Germany be the first country that has a bankrupt bank? Germany, France, and the UK paid welfare to the remaining EU members. Very few of them were contributing members. Some of them, like Sweden, they just about broke even. But most of them get money, and that's why they're there. Couldn't put together a coalition of EU states and rule over them without those states getting some benefit. They don't want the rules. They don't want the control. They want the money. The UK is getting out financially, and so this year they're paying a lot less than they used to, and after this it will be much less than that. But so that leaves a lot of the burden on Germany and France. What is the form of the welfare? The goal is to bring poorer countries up to first world status. Infrastructure, creation of jobs, economy, education. The biggest receivers are Poland, Italy, and Spain. There's another reason, too, and that reason is the U.S. blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. Now, that has cut Germany off from cheap oil. Oil to run their factories, transportation of good, overhead of it required for points of sales like stores. Just, I mean, everything is greased with oil. Harvesting the crops, oil. Transportation of the milk to stores, oil. Everything is oil. And because of this, Germany has taken a big hit. German economy has taken a big hit. The largest bank, Deutsche Bank, has said previously, has staggering exposure to derivative debt in the neighborhood of 500 to 700 trillion, yes, with a T, dollars. This last week, because of the reverbs in the banking industry, and they're like dominoes. They're all interdependent. They all, you know, do overnight swaps. They all say, I need some. Can you give me some? Sure, here's some. They work as a unified whole. So when somebody goes bankrupt, like Silicon Valley Bank, and that's a big bank, that is going to have reverberations through the halls of every bank. Well, this last week, Deutsche Bank shares closed at 8.6 lower. Lynette Zhang, which is a market analyst, she said that banks spent $180 trillion on compression. Compression is when they take debt. A lot of it's derivative debt. If they have some commonalities, they'll merge them. And instead of saying, oh, we have 500 contracts with this kind of exposure, they'll say, oh, after they merged it, they only have one. So it's a way to hide debt. They wanted to do this so badly that they spent $180 trillion to just make their books look better, book cooking. I cannot believe how the banks are allowed to operate. In the last 15 years, banks have been allowed to reclassify depositors as unsecured investors in the bank. Yep, kiss your account bye. They've reclassified savings deposits as transactional deposits. They have been allowed to merge risk-taking banks with deposit-taking banks. So you can see they know exactly where they want to go. When they get out, when they shut the door, when they close the lights, when they say bye, see you never, they want to walk out that door with all the depositors' money. How much is that? In savings accounts alone, we had, as of a couple of years ago, $10 trillion. I mean, and they want it. They say, oh, well, the FDIC, that's what the FDIC is. Do you have $250,000? Well, you're insured up to $250,000. You shouldn't worry. Well, money does the FDIC have? Nothing. It has $128 billion. The FDIC had to borrow $148 billion to bail out one bank. Savings accounts in $10 trillion? Kiss it goodbye. De-dollarization. The Kenya president of Kenya, warned his citizens. Those of you holding dollars, you'd better get rid of them, because this market is going to be different in a couple of weeks. As we know, the petrodollar is gone. Saudi trading outside of the dollar after Afghanistan. They have just begun this. There is a compact between 142 nations. It's called Operation Sandman, where 142 nations agree to repudiate the dollar at the same time. They will abandon dollar together overnight, leaving America in chaos. America will see lawlessness, violence, starvation. When? Is this what Kenya president alluded to? And that's within weeks? What happens when after General Milley ordered the U.S. out of Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia said, that's it, you guys can't be trusted. I'm out of the petrodollar business. You only have the petrodollar because I agree to sell dollars, to sell oil to anybody in dollars only. Therefore, all the countries of the world had to stock up on dollars so they could buy oil, so they could run their stuff. No more. Saudi Arabia said, I'm out of this. A bad deal to begin with. Now what are they willing to sell it in? Anything, pretty much. This is starting to happen, but the 143 countries have not, as yet, determined to do this together. Imagine this. Dollar is repudiated because it's backed by nothing, and the printing presses in the basement have been going nonstop since 08. They know that a dollar bill is worth nothing. So the countries, since they can buy oil in their own currency, they repatriate all those dollar bills back to the United States, and they demand payment in what? Yuans? Ruble? These currencies are gold backed. What's going to happen to the dollar? This is what one article said. It's in the bibliography. Project Sandman describes a 142 nation agreement that, when triggered, will see the nations simultaneously dump dollar and abandon the petrodollar. It's already been abandoned, and allow the U.S. to which has enjoyed 50 years of fiat currency counterfeiting, to have nothing. When this decision is triggered, the dollar and all dollar-denominated assets will plunge to near zero literally overnight. This means that all dollar-denominated bank accounts, bonds, pension funds, treasuries, and other investment vehicles will essentially be worth zero, for the simple reason that all banks and markets will freeze operation. Banks will freeze, banks will close, credit cards will stop functioning, food stamps will go down, stay down, ATMs will not function, wire transfers will be halted, checks won't be honored, and will appear to be offline when accessed through the internet. The dollar collapse is a deliberate plan to force the starving masses into a digital dollar control grid, and also a deliberate attempt to bring this country down. The scenario has been engineered with deliberation to force everyone where they want them to go. We're coming up upon the high holy days. I wonder if this is a time. I think we better be sure when we go into the month of April, please get into a congregation or a home Bible group. Please establish your family. You're going to need them. Get together, pool your resources. I think it's, I don't mean to scare everybody or be said bad news, but it's going to get bad. Please, please, please fast and pray. Please fast and pray. And please stay with me until with me is Stephen. So my co-host. So welcome to the show, Stephen.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Yes.
It is roaring this week, isn't it?
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. There was so much going down. I have covered pretty much Israel. Did not cover, I'll say a blurb. I haven't recorded it yet, but I have a blurb, a very short blurb on the school shooting. I have the banks. I have the banks. But anyway, that's where I basically have gone. So where would you like to go?
Well, you know, Bonnie, I will just throw in there, speaking of the banks, I continue to get updates from a very, very well-respected source that I have. And he continues to talking about the nationalizing of the banks, not being bailed out, confiscating all of their assets, and basically setting up the world for a new world order. So
yes,
it certainly is definitely headed in that direction. I don't see any changes to that. So it's just a matter of, I guess, till we see the fulfillment of everything, the fulfillment of that time. And then once that time is fulfilled, that's when we're going to get to see the real deal of what's going to happen.
You know, the High Holy Days are on the horizon at the end of next week, and I'm wondering if April is it going to be, if Father said, okay, you know what, it's my time now, I will release you to do what, Satan, I'll release you to try and establish your kingdom, which is going to be a very messy establishment. He's going to kill, rob, and destroy to establish his government. But I'm wondering if this isn't the time for that. It seems like we've been in a lull now for the pandemic. And they're talking about the next one. And last week I had a video, I think maybe I'll put it up again, that in order to subdue a population into subservience, into obedience, you have to beat them up. And part of the beating up process is you hammer them, which is the lockdowns, the school closures, the masks, the everybody's mad at everybody else, and it brings out all the little Hitlers that want to threaten to kill people, and getting on social media and just wishing the worst on everybody that is not going along. Well, that's a part of mass psychosis.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
The people who refuse to go along are the victims. And they said they sock it to you, and then they lull. Then they bring another one that is actually worse. And then there's a lull. So I'm wondering if we're not going to go into the next spiral upward into abuse of the population.
It definitely seems in that direction. I mean, everything that we're watching, I mean, it seems to be a total meltdown of society on multiple levels.
Yes.
And if we're seeing the economic meltdown starting to take place, and that seems to just be inching up slowly but surely. We see all these wars, that are just increasing. And now, it is obvious. In fact, some of the reports that I'm getting from different friends, sources that I have there, are indicating that we're really right on the edge of more fronts breaking out, including Israel. As before we came on, you and I were talking about a message that I had received where they were already indicating that Israel's airspace was going to be shut down tonight, starting at 10 p.m. local time there, which has already taken place. Here we are. Let's see. It's roughly what, Bonnie, 11 p.m. Eastern. So if you advance that 6 hours forward, well, right now they would be ending that shutdown of that airspace there that Israel would be doing. So the question is there even any news going on about what's happening in Israel right now? Maybe Israel, Syria, things like that. What would be the breaking news, if any, as of yet, any strikes going on there? So that I'm not aware of as of yet, but clearly they were talking about closing that down. So it's just a matter of time before we find out what the reason was. And maybe nothing. Maybe it was shut down, but nothing really actually took place as of yet, because so far I don't see any reports of Israel striking inside of Syria. Or Iran, for that matter. So, so we'll just have to wait to see what that was all about.
There are so many things that seem to be coming to what a convergence.
Exactly. And, you know, one thing too, Bonnie, I think that a lot of people look at, even when it comes to the markets, is when you're looking at the unrest going on in Israel, for example, and the judicial reforms that Netanyahu has been trying to push through with his right-wing coalition, and even now finally beginning to back down, mainly because the protests are in the hundreds of thousands of Israelis that have taken to the streets.
Yes.
Netanyahu, of course, claiming that is a Biden-orchestrated protest that's happening in his country. Granted, a lot of times protests are funded. They are helped and organized. I don't doubt that a bit in the world.
No, Ukraine, clearly U.S. funded.
Right. Exactly.
Egypt.
Right. So, but in the case of Israel, the people of Israel just do not like the idea of these judicial reforms, because they clip the wings of the Supreme Court. They put everything in the ultra-right Orthodox community's hands. Netanyahu, of course, likes to try to come back and say, well, this is only to bring a balance in power, because the far left, they're stopping all the agendas that the right wants to bring in. And of course, the right is the ultra-Orthodox, and they're trying to bring in their particular agenda. And of course, their agenda is pretty doggone radical as it is. I mean, let's face it. Two of Netanyahu's coalition members wanted to bring in the laws that would ban basically Christianity in the country.
Yes.
And then a lot of evangelical ministers get out there and they begin to sound the trumpet of, oh, that's not really true. Netanyahu wouldn't do that. Well, Netanyahu did pull the plug on it, but it was because believers were standing up against what was going on there. And it was an outcry. But these evangelical supporters that are out there supporting Netanyahu's coalition and what he's doing there, they're just turning a blind eye to what's really happening in Israel. They're not even taking in consideration, Bonnie, the rest of the Israeli population that is so much against this. Instead, they are very much on the side of the right Orthodox. They'll say they're supporting Netanyahu, but at the end of the day, Netanyahu's right-wing government continues to grow. In fact, with him canceling the reforms right now, it's really just a postponement, because Ben-Gvir, who is a twice convicted felon that's part of his coalition there, has now been promised to take over the National Guard. So that's interesting in itself. If he takes over the National Guard and they have another protest, the National Guard deals with internal affairs. So what's he going to do? Crush the protest with the National Guard now that he's ahead of it? So it's really just a matter of time before Netanyahu allows it to go in. And then on top of it, he fires his defense minister. And in his place, he's now wanting to put an ultra-Orthodox defense minister in as defense minister. And again, that just broadens his right-wing coalition So eventually, there's not going to be any stopping these laws and reforms that they're trying to enact.
No, he'll put everyone in charge that will bring it in. And as you said, they think of nothing else. As I said before we started, it's like the Labrador Retriever. If they see food, they just want it. They don't care what they have to crawl over, jump over, push over. They just want that food without any consideration for anything else. But I think the far right there, the ultra-Orthodox, are so, mono-visioned that there is nothing else. Just get Talmud, the law of the land. And that...
Right.
That is...
That's right. I mean, that just speaks volumes, Bonnie. I mean,
yes.
And you know what's interesting is the Orthodox community, what they want to do is they turn around and they say, well, you know, our Talmud is no different than the writings of Paul or the writings of Jesus. You know, that this basically, they are only rabbinical teachers that were also writing about what the scripture has to say. And I find that interesting that they do that, because that's how they get... Many believers to accept that their teachings are just as valuable as that of Paul or that of Jesus, etc. And yet, to me, the continuity is where the issue comes in.
Yes.
You know, there is a continuity with the New Testament. There is no continuity with the Talmud. Rabbis disagree with one another. They all have differing opinions, and yet they consider their words the words of God. So, I mean, this is like where it gets nutty. And of course, this is where, too, Jesus challenged the Talmud. And he's, because when he said, he talks about the different laws that they have, and he called them customs of men. He said, many, many such things you do. Like he would say, it is written in your law, he would say,
yes.
You know, and then he would quote different things. And then he would say, you know, that, you know, he just basically nullified those writings of in his own accord there when he wrote these things. So, you know, so that's one thing in itself there. And then, of course, you know, them trying to press their Noahide laws upon the Gentile population. And what's funny, Bonnie, there was a minister, and I won't call his name, but he actually came against me on the Noahide laws. And he says, you know, Stephen Ben-Nun knows full well that the Noahide laws are not the way he is portraying them. Basically, as if they're just a bunch of innocent little laws that nobody, it's not going to affect anyone whatsoever. Even though he knows that it is written in the Talmud, there are more than 100 sub-laws to that. And it does, they do have, you know, the beheadings and things like that that are listed in there as well. You know, so it's kind of ironic that he downplayed that. But I don't know. I guess that's just part of the plan, is to downplay it, which oddly enough, I will say this. I mean, we already know there's a lot of ministers that are controlled by government agencies to bring out the things that they want them to bring out. And I do know that that was one of the big issues when it comes to the Noahide laws. They wanted to silence us on. They didn't want us speaking about that because it is part of the new global agenda coming up.
Yes. Yes, yes. And I think when, absolutely. And I think that unless you understand the Old Testament and you understand, you know, some of what Talmud is, and you look at this, although it's being shut down more and more, even on YouTube, that even Christians don't understand when they read in the New Testament that what Yeshua said when he answered them, they said, why do your disciples not follow the customs, the traditions of the elders, and wash their hands? And Yeshua said, why do you nullify the laws of the Lord by your traditions of man?
Yes.
It's just, but they don't know what it is. They, I mean, the traditions of man were nailed to the cross. They don't realize that. And, you know, I think people, they will hear only what they want to hear. If it's going to involve getting out of their comfort zone, they don't want to hear.
That's right. They don't. They don't want to hear, like you said, when it comes to getting out of their comfort zone. And this is what I'm finding more and more, you know, when it comes to the hard issues that we need to face, you know, it's like I always say, you know, do you stand with Israel? Sure, you want to stand with Israel. But you got to understand, the Israeli people are not just made up of a few leaders that are trying to run the country. You know, there are, 8 million Jewish people living in this country there, you know, and of course, let's face the facts, except with the exception of those that are believers in Yeshua, the majority of them are not. So what difference does it make if they're Orthodox or if they are secular? If they're non-believers to begin with, the thing is our desire is that they would become believers and recognize who their Messiah really is. So to put a preference over one group or the other, in this case here, you're having so many in evangelical circles that are actually promoting an ultra-Orthodox over the secular Jew. What's the difference? I mean, if they're both Jewish, they both have fundamentally the idea that Jesus Christ or Yeshua HaMashiach is not the Messiah, then they both fundamentally disagree with what you believe in the first place. So why would you favor one group over the other? Especially in the case of where one group has such extreme views and request certain laws that would be so harmful for the believers that are living there now, not to mention believers around the world in the future. Thing is that's exactly right, Bonnie, and not to mention the ultra-Orthodox right, part of the laws that they're wanting to pass also in the land is that if you are Jewish, you will have to keep all 613 mitzvot or 613 laws.
Yes.
that they also record. And, you know, that becomes not just a theocracy, but it becomes a dictatorship.
Yes, yes. And they want to, I envision the schools would gradually turn more and more because they want control of the schools, or they want to get a toe into the schools, that it would look like yeshivas, Talmudic yeshivas. Of course, that's what yeshivas do. They don't read the Bible so much. They focus. I mean, the scripture is for the very young. But once they get into a yeshiva, then they study the writings of man. I mean, non-scriptural. I think they have the same attitude Christians do. The Old Testament is for stories for children in the early years. And then once you get to be an adult, you just listen to the pastor.
There you go.
I think it's the same. But anyway, the private, as we said, Ben-Gvir has the trade-off for Ben-Gvir staying in the coalition, without which Netanyahu's government would fail. I mean, they're hanging on by, one tooth at this point, and that's all the majority. I think they have, 61 out of 120 seats. That's it. They have a majority of one seat. So if anybody pulls out, bada bing, there goes the whole thing. So he was given authority over the internal police, the National Guard. Not a good thing. This man is rabid. Rabid.
Yes.
And as you said, he's a twice convicted felon. Served time in prison, didn't he?
That's exactly right. So, I mean, and this is what they're wanting to have running the country and stuff.
Yes.
I mean, something is seriously wrong with this, Bonnie. I mean, very seriously wrong.
I think Netanyahu is shocked at the response. He tries to say that Biden did it, that the U.S. did it, the CIA did it, whoever. But as you say, no, that's not. I mean, I believe that for a lot of disruptions, but not this one. This is genuine. The people do not want to have the ultra-Orthodox having power over all of Israel. I mean, what would that, education, women's rights. It's going to be just like a Muslim country. And as you and Yana have stated before, everything in Paul's writings about putting women down started out as rabbinic notations in the margins. All of them.
And so true, Bonnie. So true. You know, and this is what's so sad, that a lot of people are not recognizing, you know, that, you know, and really the only thing that we're looking at is that people have the freedom of choice. It's not to try to decide for Israel what, you know, how they govern their own country. But even Israelis, that's what they're looking for. They want freedom of choice, not to be dictated to on what they have to believe and how they think.
That's right. And that's what everybody has enjoyed there. But this is why, you know, 600,000 to 700,000 people, I think, in Tel Aviv alone, but they're rioting in other Beersheba, Jerusalem, some other towns. They're rioting there too. Are not rioting. They're not rioting. They're protesting. But
yes,
you know, as you said, they're just kicking the can down the road at this point. I know they're trying to hammer out some kind of compromise on this, but, you know, from what I've seen of, Ben Gvir firing the police chief of Tel Aviv because he didn't, you know, put enough blood in the street concerning these protesters. He didn't crack down on them hard enough. In fact, I have a video in the footnotes. He's out there marching with the people now. As of Sunday night, he's marching with the people. I mean, what in the world is going to happen to police chiefs like him if this goes through? I mean, I don't know. I have a, you know, is it the Antichrist who is calling for this? Is that why they're doing it now in such a lurch to the right?
It would seem to me this is one of the reasons why. They know, you know, I would say this, Bonnie, as you watch the way things are being set up in Israel right now, you look at the protests. I don't, for a moment, play orchestrated by the government. Not that the protesters would know it. They really believe they're there for the purpose, for the freedom, for getting the reform stopped. But could it be that really and truly Netanyahu wants this unrest? Will it serve the purpose that to help? Because after all, everything I've always heard was that they want to bring the world down to chaos. They want world war. They want famine. They want pestilence. They want all these things to take place. And at the end of the day, what they will do is they'll come out and they will have their new Messiah figure come on the scene, possibly an entity from another world. And they will offer in a solution for peace and safety around the world, which will include Israel at the head, Noahide laws, etc. Of course, the treatment for the diseases, Israel is going to be the head of that as well. To be able to do away with the diseases, to stop the wars, which is interesting because as Israel continues to move forward, one thing we keep seeing, though, they're not stopping the negotiations with UAE, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of things are happening.
That's an interesting point. So do you think the Antichrist can be established without that Talmudic Israel ready to receive him? I guess so, because you've said in the past that his army is coming from underneath the ground.
Exactly, and that's what they're anticipating. How crazy is that, Bonnie? Yeah. Expecting a Messiah and the armies of the Messiah to come from inner earth. That's a quote from Ariel Sadok.
It's going to be an interesting 7 years, Stephen.
You ain't kidding.
Really, really interesting. I'm sorry to laugh, everybody, but this is so confusing to even think about, that we have a country that has been, you know, it hasn't been a true democracy, but it's been a close democracy here. They've had elections, they've had freedom, they've had freedom of everything. And then to see this going on, it is such a leaves one almost speechless. But that's the times in which we live. Thank you so much, Steve, for being with us. Thank you for your insight, your commentary. Thank you, everyone, for being with us. And we'll be right back.